kcfr.org, or call me at 520-4742, and we can put KCFR to work for you. That's underwrite at kcfr.org, or by calling 520-4742. Keep it live and local at 90.1 KCFR.
This is FM 90.1 KCFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Non-human radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KCFR supporters and by Bowl Foods, serving organic, non-GMO Bowl Foods, including wild-caught mahi-mahi, and having the largest vegan menu in downtown Chico. Bowl Foods serves homemade teas and lemonade, acai bowls and smoothies blended with coconut water, and they're located at 142 Broadway, just 2 blocks from Chico State. They're open Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. and on Saturday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. with to-go and catering available. For more info, go to ilovebonefoods.com or find them on Facebook. We're also made possible by Peterson Tree Care, because trees need care. John Peterson continues his family tradition of caring for Chico's amazing natural resource. Licensed, bonded, and insured with financing available, Peterson Tree Care handles residential and commercial properties and can be reached by calling 518-0924. Stand by. Non-human radio coming up next.
Of the Academy, as well as the hunting lobby, continue to argue that banning trophy hunting will have a negative effect on wildlife biodiversity. Their rationale is that trophy hunting contributes a significant amount of revenue that African countries rely on for funding wildlife conservation. In essence, the argument is, a few animals are sacrificed through regulated quotas for the greater good of the species. This opens the door for Western tourists to shoot and kill charismatic megafauna and make a virtue of it. In reality, trophy hunting revenues make up a very small percentage of total tourism revenues in Africa. For most African countries with an active trophy hunting industry, among them South Africa, Zimbabwe, Zambia, and Namibia, the industry generates only between 0.3% and 5% of total tourism revenues. Clearly, trophy hunting's economic importance is often overstated. It's also claimed by proponents that local communities benefit significantly from trophy hunting. The evidence shows otherwise. The 2013 analysis of literature on the economics of trophy hunting done by Economists at Large, a network of economists who contribute their expertise to economic questions that are of public interest, showed that communities in the areas where hunting occurs derive little benefit from this revenue. On average, communities receive only about 3% of the gross revenue from trophy hunting. Another line of argument is that non-consumptive forms of wildlife tourism are not lucrative enough to sustain conservation efforts. Non-consumptive means things like photography or just wildlife watching, as opposed to consumptive efforts, which is hunting. The hunting lobby has therefore built a narrative where hunting is the only viable means of financing sustainable conservation in Africa. Trophy hunters often claim that they kill animals because they love animals. They rationalize their choice, for instance, by arguing that trophy hunting allows broader animal populations to be conserved. Mukoto argues that the paradox of killing an animal you allegedly love cannot be resolved in the sphere of ethics. Mukoto goes on to explore the words that are used by hunters as euphemisms to describe trophy hunting, while avoiding the word killing. Examples include words like harvesting and taking that serve to sanitize killing. This euphemization is exemplified by Walter Palmer, who shot the beloved Zimbabwe lion Cecil in the infamous Cecilgate incident of 2015. God, that seems like just yesterday, doesn't it? At the time, Palmer issued a statement in response to the outcry stating, "To my knowledge, everything about this trip was legal and properly handled and conducted. I had no idea that the lion I took was a known local favorite." Mukoto says that this choice of words isn't accidental. The effect is that we lose sight of what's actually being done to lions, rhinos, elephants, and other precious species.
Which is not bad. That's, you know, it's both intentional here in this case of hunting, and of course it's on every piece of meat you can buy in the supermarket. None of it is labeled, dead cow, dead chicken. It's a breast. It's a loin. It's a hamhock.
It's everything but the action.
The animal and what it is, because it's trying to disassociate you.
And we saw the same thing in the, we've covered the roundup of wild horses up in Monop County, and the U.S. Forest Service is trying to call that not a roundup, but a gathering. Like, wow, okay. The article goes on, the proponents of trophy hunting claim that there are no viable alternatives for Africa. They suggest that non-consumptive forms of wildlife tourism, such as photo safaris, where tourists view and photograph animals, do not generate sufficient benefits to justify keeping the wildlife habitat. If we stop trophy hunting, they say, wildlife will lose its economic value for local communities. Wildlife habitat will be lost to other land uses as a result. The truth is that well-managed, non-consumptive wildlife tourism is sufficient for funding and managing conservation. She cites an example. The country of Botswana, which in 2014 banned all commercial hunting in favor of photo tourism, which continues to thrive. In a 2017 study, residents of Mababe Village in Botswana noted that compared to hunting, which is seasonal, photographic camps were more beneficial to the community because the people are employed all year round in support of that. Trophy hunting, she concludes, trophy hunting is not the solution to Africa's wildlife conservation challenges. Proper governance, characterized by accountability, rigorous evidence-based policies and actions, and driven by a genuine appreciation of the intrinsic, not just economic, value of Africa's majestic fauna is. So that was a piece, an essay by a sociologist looking at the economics of African hunting in relation to African tourism. I went ahead and I was kind of interested in this this issue of Botswana. I hadn't realized this, but back in 2014, Botswana outlawed all commercial trophy hunting within its borders. That aggravated the hunting industry. However, according to wildlife photographic companies, wildlife areas under photo tourism delivered 1,000 times more benefits to Botswana than the hunting areas did. Photographic tourism pays much greater dividends in terms of salaries and wages, skill transfers, training, associated businesses like airlines, restaurants, hotels, etc., and also is a greater benefit to the government in terms of taxes. I thought that was just an interesting way. I hadn't really thought about it.
Yeah.
But in terms of skill transfer, I think that's probably, I would imagine learning to acquiring the ability to run a hosting business for photographic safaris and maybe developing photo skills
right.
from the eyes of
folks wanted would be excellent and skill set that's good to acquire.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the trophy hunting, it's almost always canned nuts. So the rich white Western typically, you know, pays $5,000 to $20,000, shows up for 2 days, shoots this animal standing around, leaves, or as I imagine, and, you know, as a bird watcher, photographer, you know, you're going to Africa to take some pictures, you're going to be there a while, you're going to spend time with the locals, spend more money in the village, that kind of stuff.
All right. You've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM. Listener-supported community radio, hosted by Judy Prezino and Danny Thomas. If you want to follow more current events and animal rights-related news, I invite you to follow the Non-Human Radio Facebook page. All right, Danny, what do we have coming up next?
Thanks, Jeannie. Our next news story is from a 2017 The Guardian newspaper article about Swedish farmer Adam Arneson. Arneson is not your usual milk producer. For starters, he doesn't have any dairy cattle. Until last year, all his oats went into animal feed, either sold or fed to the sheep, pigs, and cows he rears on his organic farm in Örebro County, central Sweden. With the support of Swedish drinks company Oatly, you're right, I've had Oatly, I don't know if it was Swedish, his oats are now being used to produce an oat milk drink, tapping into the growing market for dairy alternatives across the country. Livestock still provides most of his income off of the 200-acre farm Arneson runs in partnership with his parents, but he wants that to change. Arneson says of animal agriculture, quote, "The natural thing for us would be to increase our livestock numbers, but I don't want a factory. The number of animals has to be emotionally right so I know each of them." Which is interesting. I mean, it's good he doesn't want a factory. It's still a bit confused how he'd want to know the animals and then possibly kill them. But instead, Arneson wants to grow more protein crops, such as oats, and sell them for human consumption rather than feeding to livestock to produce meat and dairy. The rearing of livestock and meat consumption accounts for 14.5% of global greenhouse gas emissions, alongside carbon emissions from deforestation or pasture or crops to feed these animals. The livestock sector is also the single biggest human-related source of methane or methane from cattle, and nitrous oxide emissions from fertilizer and manure, two particularly potent greenhouse gases.
Which shouldn't be news to our listeners. We've mentioned this on several shows.
On current trends, by 2050, we will be growing more crops to feed directly to animals than to ourselves.
We already know that the biomass of humans and our livestock exceeds the biomass of all wild animals. But now, this extra little wrinkle is like we're raising more food for wild animals, for domestic animals than we were consuming directly ourselves. That's just...
It's beyond the realm of reason. It's mind-blowing. One company promoting itself heavily on this issue has been Oatly, that has been causing controversy and has even been the target of legal action from a Swedish dairy trade group. No surprise, we see this time again, with its outspoken attacks on the dairy sector and its related climate emissions. Quote, "Ditch the cows, drink oat milk, and save the planet," has been the gist of its marketing messaging, which has included a promotional field of CEO Tony Peterson singing, "Wow, no cow," in the field of oats. Now, does that rhyme in Swedish?
Absolutely.
Doing this in English. A lot of Europeans speak English. CEO Peterson says the company is just telling people what the science tells us about the need to consume more plant-based foods. You know, it's amazing how often people react strongly to just hearing science about, be it climate change or animal agriculture or anything. The Swedish Food Agency, while it highlights the benefit of grazing animals for producing a rich agricultural landscape.
What business does the food agency have making that statement?
What does that mean? What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. That we're agricultural. We're not literally talking about landscapes or wolves. They're just saying, like, it's nice to have cows out there. People like it. I don't know what they're saying. Anyway, so the Swedish Food Agency, which is ruled in on this, warns people against consuming too many dairy products due to the climate impact of methane gas emissions from cows.
And then we remember
administration has regulations, but once programs, they are required to put dairy on it, or their funding will be revoked because, what do we call it? Oh, it's called bribes.
Subsidies.
Subsidies, sorry. I forgot the politically correct word. However, Arneson also says many farmers in Sweden believe Oatly is demonizing dairy farmers. He reports that he had a lot of arguments on social media.
That's his fault. Don't go on social media. Yeah. Don't read the comments.
I may be known for this myself. He had a lot of arguments on social media with other farmers because he thought what Oatly was doing could bring better opportunities to the agriculture sector. He decided to contact Oatly in 2015 to see if they could help him switch away from livestock.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a good. He reached out. Lucky for him, for Oatly, the timing was ideal. The company buys its oats from a wholesaler, as it says it is not at the scale to mill and process the oats itself, but it saw Arneson as an opportunity to demonstrate how it can help farmers transition away from livestock farming.
They just need to learn.
Yeah. By late 2016, Arneson had his own unlimited edition range of Oatly branded oat milk complete with a national video campaign. So far, Arneson says he has faced a little hostility now from his neighbors for collaborating with what they...
Collusion.
Says now, wait, no, I don't want to get it. The company played upon the heritage of oats in the Swedish diet by branding Arneson's limited edition range as old-fashioned oats drink.
Yeah, it's too bad we don't have that in America, right? Oat drink is not a thing.
No, we pretty much have old-fashioned corn grain alcohol. After the first year producing oats, analysis by researchers at the Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences found that Arneson's farm was producing double the amount of calories for human consumption per acre and had halved the climate impact of each calorie produced. So
let's hear that again. He doubled the amount of calories for human consumption per acre. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Well, partly is like it's all that sunlight is converted there for the most part into proteins and starches that humans can consume, as opposed to all the parts of the cow that you can't consume. There's less. It's much more efficient.
Yeah, and energy decreases as you go along that chain. At present, Arneson admits growing oats for milk is only viable with Oatly's support of a guaranteed market. You know what, though? I mean, that's any agriculture is only viable with a guaranteed market.
Raising cows for meat is only viable when there's, you know,
McDonald's and government bailouts. So, yeah. But with the growth of the company, he hopes that can change in the near future. Arneson told The Guardian that he, quote, doesn't want to take pride from having a tractor or producing 10 tons of wheat or a sow with 10 piglets, but in feeding and preserving the planet. That is one of the big things I want as a farmer to be involved in changing. Converting to growing oats will be viable for everyone and not for those dairy farmers that have built up a large farm business. But we need to start talking about farming in a different way, about the opportunities and not just the problems.
Here we go.
Yeah, so that was an article from last August 2017 edition of The Guardian on a Swedish dairy farmer transitioning from growing grains to feed animals to growing grains to feed people directly.
And it just reminds me of Howard Lyman, the mad cowboy, former cattle rancher, feedlot operator, who went vegan, ethical vegan, who says, farmers should be feeding people, not animals. And this is a prime example of that.
And there's always this sort of cultural, we got to stick with the old ways, and the farmers just, they want to do it this way. And like, farmers sell whatever makes them money. They have switched from peaches to almonds to chickens to whatever they need to switch to. It happens.
Yeah. I mean, but what that fifth generation, what that first generation farmer was doing is not what the fifth generation farmer is doing at all. Right, you've been listening to Animal News on Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, hosted by Janie Trezina and Danny Toms back in the studio. Our last news story is about the surge in investment and popularity of a variety of meatless meats with consumers and also their popularity with investors. This is an article from CBS National News from May 15, 2019. Meatless meat can taste just like the real thing, and investors are salivating over what some predict could be a $35 billion alternative meat market. After a successful test run in Burger King, Impossible Foods is going nationwide at the fast food drive later this year with its meatless Whopper. Impossible Foods competitor Beyond Meat had the most successful IPO so far this year, its stock price soaring
163% in mere weeks. Gone are the days when vegan meat was derided as tasteless as sacrifice vegetarians made in service of a greater environmental cause or ethical cause. Today's meatless meat tastes just like the real thing, can satisfy the most bloodthirsty of carnivores, and they are here to stay. After testing its plant-based Whopper in a Burger King location in April of this year, plant-based food company Impossible Foods is going to go nationwide with the fast food chain in more than 7,000 locations. When competitor plant-based substitute company Beyond Meat went public in early May, its stock price soared 163% in a day. The company, which has yet to turn in a profit, is now valued at about $4 billion, making it the most successful IPO thus far this year. And just as a, just for some background, I looked it up. Its stock price today is about $77 per share. Its opening share price on May 2nd, 2019, when it premiered, went up to $65, and its estimated starting share price was way lower, somewhere like in the $40, $45 range. The stock market, that stock hit a high of $92 per share on May 16th. So it's very volatile at the moment, but it started out pretty strong. If you wanted to check that yourself, it's the stock market call letters are BYND, Beyond. Investors, celebrities, and consumers are all taking notice. Impossible Foods announced on Monday that it raised $300 million in its latest round of private funding, which is the largest ever for a plant-based meat company, according to the Good Food Institute. The Silicon Valley startup has raised about $750 million since its founding in 2011. It also has a slew of health-conscious and environmentally-minded celebrity investors, including Alex Ohanian, Jaden Smith, Jay-Z, Katy Perry, and Serena Williams. While CFO David Lee said Impossible Foods does not pay for promotions, some celebrities have gone out of their way to give the food company a shout-out, like Katy Perry, who changed into an Impossible Burger costume at the Met Gala this year. That gala is over-the-top crazy. Despite Beyond Meat's success in going public, Impossible Foods CFO David Lee insisted on Wednesday to CBS News that the company has no plans to announce an IPO and is focusing instead on trying to meet the surge of demand on the heels of its Burger King expansion. It's a big deal, right? 7,000 Burger Kings. I don't even know what level of increase that is, if it's 100% or 300% in terms of production.
And it could be interesting in the future, so to do, you know, how many beef suppliers, the network of beef suppliers and slaughterhouses close to meat consumers. I think with one of them only has, like, fresh beef, for example, right? That's even more difficult to have somebody nearby.
Yeah. That is, yeah, because certainly what makes animal meat so accessible is this huge middleman system.
Yeah.
Right? Huge producers and then these very specific, very economical lines of supply. CFO Lee told CBS that the company, Impossible Foods, is not in a rush to go public. The company is focused on serving its meat eaters well and increasing its supply, both of which can be accomplished without an IPO. Impossible Foods is planning to hire 50 new employees at its Oakland, California facility, which currently already employs 70 full-time workers, to help meet the increase in demand. Investor interest in meatless alternative companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods mirrored the surge in plant-based alternatives in the U.S. Of the $16 billion invested into the U.S. plant-based meat, egg, and dairy companies in the past decade, $13 billion flowed in 2017 and 2018 alone, according to the Good Food Institute. So I'm sure that if you saw the graph, it'd just be like huge spike upwards.
So that's the inflection point we've been waiting for, I think.
Bruce Friedrich of GFI, the Good Food Institute, told CBS that investors and entrepreneurs are capitalizing on a global shift in the way meat is produced. The market opportunity is massive. Alternative meat companies help to replicate the success of the non-dairy milk industry, which has grown to about 13% of the milk market by positioning itself as the healthier alternative. Too bad it can't position itself as the more ethical alternative. Beyond Meat said in its filings that the vegan meat market can similarly grow to about $35 billion of the $250 billion domestic meat industry, which
So they said they could print about 14%. We wanted to do more. That means that Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat may become leaders in a fast-growing and highly competitive space. The meat industry itself is hedging its bets as well. For instance, the poultry giant Tyson has made investments in the Jerusalem-based Future Meat Technologies company and the lab-grown meat producer Memphis Meats. Part of Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat's success comes from marketing their product to meat lovers as opposed to vegans. Vegans who make up just 5% of Americans, according to the Beyond Meat's SEC filings. Both companies have gone through considerable length and spent hefty capital to ensure their beef patties mimic the real thing in taste and texture. Beyond Meat, which makes pea protein as the base of its products, also uses beet juice to help achieve the look of meat. Meanwhile, Impossible Foods isolated an iron-rich molecule called heme from soy plants to achieve the beefy, meaty taste of meat, famously making its veggie patties bleed and be temperature sensitive, so you can have the rare burger audio. Predictably, some health experts criticize processed alternative burger products for not being all that health conscious, because there's always a critic. While Impossible Foods CFO Lee said that vegan patties are environmentally friendly and use less land and water, and produce less greenhouse gases than animal products, some nutritionists say they're not necessarily healthy for consumers. For diners who may be looking to make the switch to the plant-based meat for health reasons, like lowering their salt or fat intake, the Impossible Burger is not notably healthier. It has a zero cholesterol and about the same saturated fat as a traditional beef patty, but more than 4 times the amount of sodium. So basically, if you want to play the plant-based option that has a burger taste, the Impossible Burger is an option, but it comes with a similar amount of fat and calories. And that was a CBS News piece on Impossible Foods, Beyond Meat, and the growth, ongoing growth of the U.S. meat market.
And you can't yet buy it in stores, but you can buy Beyond Burgers all around town. So,
Beyond Meat is available at supermarkets. Tons of supermarkets. Impossible Foods is still going with the food service sector, so restaurants and presumably like hospitals and schools.
So like it's like 3 minutes aside to cook them. Sit there and I'm like, is it bleeding too much? Am I going to get sick?
You don't have to worry about cross contamination. Okay, you've been listening to Animal News on Nonagon Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener supported community radio, hosted by Jenny Trezino. We have now the calendar of events. I just want to point out this Saturday, and the Chico V and Pollock is being held on Saturday, March 25th at 6 p.m. at the Chico Public Library on Sherman Avenue. You can find public details on the schedule for the rest of the year at chicovegan.com. And coming up on June 1st is a new event, which is the Animal Place Tour. Please join Chico Vegan Meetup for a special guided group tour of Animal Place on Saturday, June 1st at 11 a.m. to visit with some of the over 400 rescued farm animals who call Animal Place home. Afterwards, the group will enjoy a vegan potluck to talk about the animals the folks have met. And if you've never been to Animal Place, you're in for a very special experience. Please see the Facebook event at Chico Vegan Meetup or go to chicovegan.com for more information. And like always, you do not have to be vegan to attend events or any Chico Vegan Meetup event.